Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 178 for the middle of September 2010. So glad you could join me. And I mentioned last week that we have Kate Stalter with us today. And she is one of the people that does a great deal of work at IBD, Investors Business Daily, and host of the market wrap videos of the day. If you haven't seen those, I encourage you to do so. And I thought, because in the past, a lot of people have written me when we have Kate on and we talk about the various issues concerning patterns and strategic ways to make money in the market, that we would have her on right from the beginning of the show and really go through things. And at the same time, it turns out there's a brand new book, which we're going to talk about in a second, that is put out by William O'Neill, How to Make Money in Stocks. And probably I've recommended that 100 times to everybody, but this is The Complete Investing System. And I'm going to kind of ask some questions about that. So, Kate, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. Great to be here today.
Thanks. Listen, I got so many, I got a laundry list of things to ask you. I wanted to ask you this. You know, there's been in IBD, Investors Business Daily terminology, this whole thing of market in correction, market in confirmed uptrend. And by the way, you changed it from rally to uptrend not too long ago, right?
Yeah, that terminology did change, but nothing in the indicators changed. It's exactly the same format that it's been for years.
But what's happened lately, I've noticed, is that where it used to be kind of in a market in confirmed uptrend, confirmed rally, let's say, for a while. And then let's say that, you know, uptrend under pressure. And then you'd see something like a market in correction for a while. It seems to be jumping around very quickly lately. You know, we're talking about within, I think, last week, it went from market in correction to market in rally within a period of a week or a week and a half.
You know, the market has been pretty volatile, especially, you know, on and off for the past few years. But even if you just go back and take, say, since the spring, April or May of this year, I mean, we've seen the VIX spike a number of times. So folks who follow that, it's no mystery that the market has been volatile. But, you know, one of the things about those market outlooks that you do see in investors.com, sure, it can be frustrating for an investor who's really, you know, hoping for that solid uptrend that we all want to see, but these have been proven historically time and time again. And, you know, we do warn people in the paper that when you see heavy volume selling in the first few days after a new uptrend is confirmed, when you do see that, historically, that can put a new uptrend at risk. So, in effect, Andrew, none of this is really new. These are the same things that have been going on at least since the 1880s, which is where our market research goes back to at this point. You know, it's just we go through certain periods of volatility, and in the past few years and in the past few months, sometimes it just does seem exaggerated because everybody's just waiting for that nice uptrend.
Right. So what happens is, though, that according to, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but according to the IBD philosophy that when markets are in a correction, you don't buy, you go to cash if your stocks go beyond a certain point, maybe an 8% from your buy point. And then from there, you sit on the sidelines waiting for good entry points again for stocks that are looking the best from a fundamental standpoint and from a technical standpoint, right?
Yeah, there's a couple things. First of all, right, you should absolutely limit your buying to times when the market is in an uptrend, because that's when, again, and this is based on extensive research, that's when the best stocks, the leading stocks, do tend to break out of areas of price consolidation and run higher. It's also, it does limit your risk. It's really can swim as growth investing with some safeguards. So by only buying in an uptrend, it's much less risky. You know, 3/4 of stocks tend to follow the market's direction. So if you're in a downturn, something might look good one day, but we've all seen these days when the market just gets completely spooked by some kind of news and your stock could head south. So that's why over the years these rules have been developed. Now, I wanted to also, you had mentioned the 7% sell rule. I wanted to talk about that too. What that is, anytime you buy a stock and it breaks out of a solid base, a sound area of price consolidation, and falls 7%, 8% from your buy point, that generally means, Andrew, that the stock doesn't have what it takes at that moment to go on and become a big winner. So the safest thing for an individual investor to do is to cut their losses, preserve your capital. You know, as individuals, we have a great advantage that the funds don't have, is that we can be very, very nimble. We don't have to be fully invested
right.
at all times.
Right.
And that's the beauty of this, of being able to cut your losses. And if we are in a market correction and your stocks are showing weakness, take a look at them, see if they do need to be sold. Now, over the years, a lot of people have kind of misunderstood that rule a little bit and thought that the minute that a market goes into a correction, that means automatically sell your stock.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And,
no.
And no. Colonial has clarified
right.
What that means is just keep watching your stocks. Be prepared to sell and keep your gains. But, you know, if you have a stock that continues to perform well, or you have a nice cushion in a stock, and maybe it's only correcting slightly, holding up better than the general indexes, then maybe you can sit through the correction, but you really need to be very careful about that.
Well, some of these corrections have been so dramatic, even in a short mm-hmm. period of time, that you can see stocks off 10% in a given matter of days. I mean, we saw mm-hmm. last week, for example, an announcement by President Obama, who said that he was going to possibly put in a $50 billion infrastructure bill, and immediately we saw some of the concrete and steel companies, right, the construction companies move up very dramatically, only to peel back a little bit a few days later. But still, you see that this is such a news-driven market right now between the economics. You know, you could have three sets of economics on a daily basis. And you have in the morning a good set that comes out at before the market. Markets are doing fine. You have something come out at 10. It makes everybody upset. And then you have something at 2 again that makes everybody all happy. It's ridiculous how quickly things are moving and how news-driven. And I do believe that has to do something with the lack of volume overall, because we've been seeing volume drying up, haven't we?
That's true. Volume has been a little bit lower, although, you know, August is sometimes historically with people on vacation, so in the past month or so, sometimes that's not uncommon to see. But, you know, that is one of the things to be careful of. Although, one thing that IBD, and this is another place where people sometimes get confused about IBD's rules. When we talk about heavy volume, we're not necessarily saying you should watch for above average volume to compare one day versus the next, for example. You're looking at heavier volume than the previous session in terms of the general indexes. So that would be your comparison point there. So when we talk about, say, a distribution day, a day of heavy volume selling on the indexes, we wouldn't necessarily be talking about above average volume that day across the indexes, just heavier volume than the previous session.
Okay, I got you. Now, I want to get back to some of these questions on some of the IBD, we'll call it your very favorite type of technical studies that you do as well as patterns. But I had a couple of things I wanted to get to because I got the book and it comes with, it's very, very nice. A lot thicker than his previous books. This is, again, called How to Make Money in Stocks, which is the book that originally was written, I think the original book by William O'Neill, Bill O'Neill, and talks about all the things that he has learned over the years of both investing and providing information for institutions and for individuals. This one's called The Complete Investing System because it comes with a CD in the back, or DVD in the back, I guess it is, on an action plan. It also gives you a variety of other things, like you can get into some of the meetings and things, but also is a much more complete book in terms of almost, it seems to me from when I've gone through it, and I just got this a couple of days ago, that it combines all the different components of the books that he's written in the past, like the top 20 ways to do things, et cetera. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, one of the things that Bill was really trying to do with this particular edition, Andrew, was to address some of the things that you've been talking about today, actually, which is some of the volatility in the market and how challenging it's been for individual investors. So that's exactly right. You know, he's brought in a lot of other elements here to help people out, the admission to the seminar to really immerse you in this education, the use of the online tools. You know, this isn't just read a book. This is really about, hey, you know, we recognize this is challenging, but there are rules you can follow. There are ways you can really immerse yourself in this system and learn this pretty quickly if you do that. I mean, you know, it's amazing to me because you don't need any kind of advanced degree in finance. You don't need an MBA to do this. I mean, I think very often I met a long-haul trucker at one of our events who had done very well with this system. We've met all kinds of small business owners, just, you know, stay-at-home moms. We've met people from all walks of life who, once they just put their mind to this and decide, yeah, hey, I want to learn how to make more money in good markets and protect my money in bad markets. And that's what Bill was trying to help people with here.
So one of the things that this book does is it starts out with the first area talking about, beyond the introduction, talking about CAN-SLIM, which is the acronym that was brought in of how to pick stocks. And it goes through each individual letter, like the C, the A, the N, et cetera. Go through very quickly the CAN-SLIM and how do individual people actually, you know, the average person listening out there is like, okay, I get the fact when you go through the different acronyms and the letters, but how do you actually find those? How do you find the CAN-SLIM?
Okay. Well, you know, that's one of the things that IDD steers people toward every single day. You know, I think we talked about this last time I was on here. We know everybody's very busy. So we give people some shortcuts to finding these great stocks. I'm looking at the homepage right now. I have it up in front of me, investors.com. And right in front of me is a feature called Stocks on the Move that shows you top-performing stocks moving up in heavier volume than the previous session. And these are some names that people may not be totally familiar with, but they are good stocks to possibly check out and maybe put on a watch list. I mean, I'm looking at Radiant Systems, RADS. And, you know, these aren't recommendations, Andrew. I'm just kind of reading from the screen right now.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that could be one to check out. Probably a lot of people don't know that one. Jinko Solar, that's a brand new
That's one's been out of control. That's out of control.
It has. That's right, JKS.
That has been ridiculous. Yeah. It was up 9%, then it's down 2%, then it's up 10%, but it's been almost a parabolic rise straight up, which is pretty cool. And it's nice to see some of these IPOs recently, like Make My Trip and Jinko Solar and a few others, have been doing very well compared to a few of the flops like Tesla. But that's interesting. So that I think that's probably too new to actually add to your core lists in like the IBD 100, Jinko Solar, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the newer companies do make it to the IBD 100. And that, I should explain what that particular list is. That's a list of the 100 top-performing stocks that runs every Monday in the paper, regardless of market condition, because even in bad markets, there are absolutely leading stocks outperforming the S&P 500. So that's what this is. They are stocks with excellent fundamentals, great earnings growth, great sales growth, great return on equity, plus chart action being brought up in heavier than normal volume, they have to have this combination and be within a certain percentage of their 52-week high as well. So the IBD 100 is absolutely one of the best idea sources. I mean, we hear this from people over and over again. It's not a buy list. However, in a good market, you will see, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, that stocks that are approaching a buy point are highlighted in a black border, so people can take special notice of that. But, you know, everybody has to be cautioned about this all the time. Even though this is a great list to get ideas from, you want to make sure that any stock you buy fits with your own risk tolerance. You know, for example, something like a JNCO Solar may just be too volatile for you. You may not want to load up on a lot of thinly traded stocks, for example. That's something Bilenius cautioned against. You don't want 7 or 8 of those in your portfolio. You want to balance them with some more widely held. But nonetheless, IBD 100 gives you a good mix of many of these. It kind of has a small cap and mid cap flavor to it, but it's a great idea list.
So the you know, back to the IBD 100 for a second. How does something become number 1 versus number 10?
You know, the formula is actually proprietary. I don't know what it is. Most people at IBD don't know what it is. I think Bill O'Neill and a few programmers know what that is. But, you know, you can look at the charts and you can tell that, you know, the ones that are higher up have had some good price action lately in terms of being bought in heavy volume. And of course, that combination of fundamentals. I mean, if a company has an earnings report, for example, and it just, the fundamentals just shift. It has like a quarterly loss, for example, that no one ever saw coming. That's going to hurt that EPS rating. That would probably knock that stock down further on the list or even off the list. Certainly heavy selling. I mean, we've all seen cases of a stock that is sold heavily all of a sudden. I mean, if you recall Crocs back in 2007, what happened on that one? You remember that, how it just plummeted that day. So that's the kind of action. I'm not saying that happened specifically in that case. I don't recall whether that was on the 100 or not.
I should share with you my continual beating up of that stock prior to it dropping, my talking about how this is the biggest piece of Crocs, if you will, that ever existed. And the turning point is when there was an announcement that came out that talked about Crocs, that the material was now being thought of because of the non-bacterial and non-viral nature of this material, and how they were going to start making toilet seats out of it. And I said, that's it. They've jumped the shark. And, you know, so I said, you know, at that point, but that was just a kind of a funny point. But I wrote about it continually, and I was wrong for a long time, because it doesn't matter sometimes that there may be something very, very dramatically negative. For example, we have the same situation going on. It happens to be shoes, but with Skechers right now, they have this new Fit and Soul, or whatever they call this new product that supposedly, right, as you walk, as you run, is a much better design. It kind of has this little kind of shape to it. Been very, very volatile. Frankly, we think that a lot of other players are in the market. There's going to be a fad, et cetera, and it's going to just drop. Now, different than Crocs, that was trying to buy a couple of different companies and was trying to break away from what they did, Skechers still has their baseline sneaker and shoe business. Aside from this, and they, you know, have a lot of people that are competing against them. And by the way, through all this, like a Steve Madden, a Deckers, a Skechers, a Nike, have done very, very well through all of this. You know, all the downturn, as a matter of fact,
right.
And that's kind of an interesting play. Although they go through their ups and downs, same thing with casual. I put them in the same category as casual restaurants. You know,
it's kind of like
a cheaper. You got to eat, got to wear shoes. You maybe want to go cheaper so you could, you know, buy down a little bit. But getting back to the IBD 100 list and good idea list, one of the things that I have seen is, I want to talk about a cup and handle for a second. And for those of you that don't know this, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and tell me if I'm not right about this, but I believe this was created, or at least identified, that's probably a better word, identified by William O'Neill as a pattern that has a very, very powerful potential upside. Am I correct so far?
Right. He identified this back in the early 60s, like just about almost 50 years ago now. And that's exactly right, that was one of the patterns that he saw frequently, that as stocks consolidated their price gains, they would break out of these little areas of consolidation. And one that popped up again and again was the cup with handle. And, you know, what's so interesting, Andrew, is that to this day, you still see those. I mean, sometimes people get skeptical and they say, well, that was 1960. Everything's different now. Well, you know what? You still see a lot of cup with handles. They are still the most common pattern that winning stocks form before they make a big price move.
Yeah, one of the things, if you just think about it for a second, if you just think about a U, the letter U, again, this is very simply looking at this letter U, and then at the top of the right-hand side of the U, you kind of just give a little bit of a shake down, and then it turns back up, and when it gets past that letter U again, where the top with the left and the right side is kind of where the potential upside potential goes from there. That's a very simplistic look at it. Also, you want to have things like on the downstrokes, you want to have less volume. You want to have on the handle part of it, you want to have less volume. And then you want to see a significant amount of volume on the breakout. Okay, that being the case. You know, what I've seen, though, lately is a lot of failed breakouts. Have you noticed this?
Well, there are also going to be some in any kind of market. But, you know, and again, that would speak to some of the volatility, and that's often an indication that the market is showing some weakness. You know, in a market downtrend, you're going to see that. And that is one of the reasons why IBD suggests do not buy in a market downtrend, because even if a stock does break out of a base, it might not be able to sustain any kind of rally.
Right, because really also there's a different way to look at this just for a moment. Putting aside cup and handle, we could say kind of a cup and handle is a double top, right, from the range. And when you break past a double top, again, I'm making a very simplistic point here, is that when you break past a double top, you're breaking past the resistance point. What you want to see in a cup and handle, again, is that cup where you see that there's an orderly distribution through a period of time for whatever reason, and then it turns back up. But when it gets to the top again, you got those people and the double top that are going to say, you know what, I'm selling my shares here, but not in such a way that you see institutional selling. And then what happens is when that handle comes down and that handle doesn't come down, what is it, more than halfway between the top and bottom of the cup? You don't want to see that much, right? You want to see more like a
third? Yeah, it should. The handle should form in the upper half of the base.
Right.
It should only correct no more than about 12%. You want to see lower volume. It should take place over a minimum of 5 days. I mean, there are a number of rules for a proper handle.
Right.
You know? And these aren't arbitrary. That's based on a lot of historical research showing how the best cup with handle bases tend to perform.
And there could be, by the way, there's many, many cup and handles in a chart trend that could occur. You could have several different ones. But I want to talk about a couple different things. And I think last time we talked about the railroad tracks, I want to talk about a three-week tight pattern.
Why?
What's the significance of a three-week and actually, we could extend it to a four-week, I know I've seen before. But what's the significance of a three-week and a four-week tight pattern?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question, because that is something that comes up quite a bit. After a stock has broken out of a base, like a cup with handle, for example, or one of the other bases, like a double bottom, and then it rallies a bit, and it's holding up nicely, and then it keeps its gains, but it kind of goes into a holding pattern. Okay? And you see it closing within a tight range for 3 or maybe 4 weeks in a row. And when I say a tight range, you want to see the closes less than about 1% or so apart, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a 3 week tight. The reason that's important is because that shows you that institutional investors are just holding on to shares at that level. They're not selling. They have confidence in this stock. They're just kind of holding on to it for a while. It often precedes another big run-up.
Right, because I think it oftentimes it doesn't matter if it closes to the top or the bottom, but again, the closing price is, you can almost draw a straight line right across three weeks or so. And in fact, the other one that deals with weekly trading patterns is something like this. There's a lot of different rules that you put out, but one of the things that's interesting is that you want to buy a stock when it retraces back to its 10-week line, which is the equivalent of a 50-day line, but it's a little bit different. The number's a little bit off, but because of the way the calculation of 10-week versus 50-day, of course. But you want to see if you can see that cup and handle pattern and then a breakout and then possibly a move back to the 10-week line to touch the 10-week line, oftentimes institutions will step in there. Is that correct? And then they'll push the stock, let it bounce off there pretty hard.
Yeah, what happens is a 10-week support is a great sign, because that's often when the mutual funds or pension funds, some of the fund managers will look at one of their existing holdings and see an opportunity for them to get in, support the stock at a slightly lower price than it had been maybe just a few days ago. So they'll buy up some more shares because they still have confidence in this. Over and over and over again, IBD has seen that 10-week support is a possible indicator of a further price run. That's absolutely, and that's a place where in the IBD 100 or some of our other features, you'll often see a stock highlighted when it gets 10-week support as being in possible buy range.
Right, and you know, it's almost like if you think about this for a second, over the last several months, I guess it would be, we've seen this 1040 level in the S&P 500, and everybody's like, "What? Where's the magic? Why is it all of a sudden people coming in?" Well, you have people that's supporting that realize that if you break through that 1040 number, it's going to be a real problem. So if there's any cash left in a mutual fund and institutions, they're going to want to buy it. But also, the signal goes on that says, hey, the S&P 500 to 1040, that's where the bounce is. That's where that line in the sand is. And that's where a lot of people are going to actually go and look to buy. Why don't we do the same thing? Because it's a safe buy point. That may not always hold up. As a matter of fact, we know that over time, if that happens more and more and more, it's kind of like breaking through a piece of glass. Eventually, you're going to tap it, and then it's going to probably cave in. But nonetheless, it's the same thing with the 10-week. It acts as a line in the sand for the institutions that want to support the stock. They realize that getting below the 200, getting below the 10-week, getting below the 50, the 20, those are all negative connotations for the stock and can start a real roller coaster on the downside and a real correction in the stock. So why not try to hold it up before it's too late? And I think that's, you know, a very important issue. Let's get back to the book for a second, because you mentioned, we've mentioned a few different things. We've mentioned the 3-week tight and 4-week tight pattern. We talk about various bases like the cup with handle with the breakout. There's a few other things out there, and I know we've seen irregular bases, double bottom bases that you've talked about. And by the way, the Monday paper, actually, you get delivered on Saturday. So you're way ahead of the game, and if you're looking to make a game plan for the next week ahead, if you're looking to utilize some of the IBD work, by the way, which has a great political commentary and things in the back of the newspaper, wonderful, great cartoons, by the way, great cartoons, but also the IBD 100 is listed there and some discussion about what would be the top, et cetera, and also throughout the paper, the highlights of the week, et cetera. So it gives you kind of a summation of what happened, some commentary, what's going on, focusing on a sector, et cetera. I am not a salesperson for this, but I have been for many, 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 many years a reader of I read the weekend especially, but I really absorb that and use that for a lot of ideas. And it's interesting because a lot of our screens happen to coordinate and look very similar to many of the IBD 100s. It just so happens that I also like a return on equity that's high. I want to make sure that I have a consistent quarterly earnings that are revving up. I want to see earnings over year basis doing very well, low debt ratios, management participating inside the buying. Also, we want to see institutional volume heating up if possible. You know, all the things that I mean, most people would want that in a growth orientation. So a lot of our names overlap. Not a lot of them, but a good chunk of them.
Yeah, and then you know, what IBD really steers people towards is once you've identified those growth names and spotted the best time to buy them, then monitor them and know what condition the market is in and know when it's possibly time to sell and keep your gains.
Right. So let's go back to cancel them real quick. Can you just rattle off for me the acronyms and what each means?
Yes. C stands for current quarterly earnings. Ideally, you'd like to see these at 25% or higher because that's what the biggest growth winners do show historically. A is annual earnings. You also want to see a yearly track record of earnings going back, just to make sure the company does have a solid history in that area. Again, you want to see 25% or more. N is new, and this is pretty interesting. This is really one of the hallmarks of a growth company because there's a lot of areas, Andrew, that can be new, which is a new product or service. I mean, look at all, you go through all these stocks that are on the IBD 100 now, and they're all, many of them are just doing something that's really changing their industry. you know, new conditions in an industry can be part of the end, a new price high for the stock, a new company, a new IPO. Frequently, it's new management that comes into an older line company and really brings some fresh ideas. So you always need something new in there that's driving that sales growth.
Right, so maybe, like, for example, new management. We just saw that Nokia poached somebody from Microsoft. That may do something for the Nokia stock. You may see a new technology like Intuitive Surgical with the robotic surgical methodology, or something like a Priceline or a C-Trip, which is actually doing a lot in the travel area. You may see, again, things like just something that is going to be different about that, maybe a restructuring, maybe a lot of things in the end. So no, I agree with you. I mean, obviously, that's where the excitement comes in.
Right, exactly. That's what draws the investors. S is supply and demand, and that's pretty simple. You just want to be tracking, is there the heavier volume as stocks are being bought up, and lower volume, hopefully, as they're being sold off. You just want to make sure that the supply and demand equation is working in your favor. Heavy volume to the upside, lower volume on down days or weeks. Now, let's see. We're up to the L, leadership. Well, this is, again, kind of what we've been talking about. You want to make sure that your stock, not only is it a good growth company, but also that it's showing leadership in terms of coming from a leading industry. You know, a current example right now is all these groups that are involved with the cloud computing. That's an industry that has just really taken over, and there are a number of stocks coming from the cloud computing sector or close to that that are doing well.
Let me tell you something. I wouldn't be surprised if Caterpillar starts talking about how their business is cloud computing. This is like the this is just one of these catch things. Like, do you remember a few years ago, 2 years ago, that you had to say that China was somewhere inside of your corporate earnings report, that revenues came from that? And, you know, it's like almost saying seriously that like a company like what would be a ridiculous company like a U.S. Steel, you know, is now a cloud computing company. I mean, because now you have a few things going on, the whole big fight with HP and Dell over Par 3, and you have companies like a VMware, which is cloud. It has a couple different things they do. They do virtualization, but they also have cloud orientation to them.
Right.
Rackspace clearly is one of them that hosts all those. And then you have the Microsoft, the Googles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the big names out there. But, you know, F5 computing. But now the thing is that it's almost gotten to a point that I'm saturated personally with this cloud discussion. Not that it's a bad thing, but I'm just saturated with it already. But,
you know, there's a couple ways to look at that, too. On the one hand, you know, Bill O'Neill always cautions about don't let your opinion or media hype keep you away from what could be a good investment. But, you know, the other thing, too, is the reality is, Andrew, I mean, sometimes the hype does get overinflated and then the industry does fall out of favor, and you have to know when that's happening.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
All right, so what do we have? We're up to I.
Yes, the institutional investors, you know, this is related to supply and demand. When you do see the heavy volume buying, you know, a lot of people don't realize those are not individual investors that are really pushing a stock price markedly higher. What that is are the institutions who account for about 3/4 of market activity. If they're buying, that's a great clue to the individual that they have confidence. These guys, they don't get in and out of these stocks in a heartbeat. You know, they typically buy to hang on to these for a while, so that's a good indicator for the individual. By the same token, that's why heavy volume selling is such an indicator that IBD uses, because if the institutional investors are selling in big volume, the individual also wants to take note and probably also think about getting out.
Mm-hmm.
We're up to M. Mm-hmm. Market direction. And, you know, as we often say, that comes last in CanSlim, but it's really one of the more important factors. We've mentioned it already today. You want to identify a market uptrend. Limit your buying to when the market is trending higher, because 3/4 of stocks follow the market direction. And when the market is trending lower, really avoid making new buys. In most cases, watch your stocks very carefully to see if they're showing signs of selling and prepare yourself for the next uptrend.
Okay. Well, that was just chapter one of this new book that just came out. Actually, you know what's nice about this too, though? The charts are much bigger than some of the other books I've seen in the past. and you give a very good definition of each of the things, like when a market's correcting, what happened. I'm looking at page 50 about Redmond Industries from back in 1968, 65 through 68. And it says, you know, there was a three-week tight close, and even at this extended point at this point, you know, there's a three-week tight. What do you do? Well, there was no buying that went on there, but you didn't sell either. You showed you the various 13-week cup with handle, the initial buy point back in 1967, and then the next cup and handle breakout point, which was, I guess, 1968, and what to do with those. And again, you know, all the different components. Here's Adobe Systems on page 72. I'm just kind of grabbing things here. You know, you showed the IPO. Nothing was bought with the IPO. You heard an earnings acceleration, a buy point back in, I guess it was 86. I think it was 86. September of 86, and then kind of riding it out, and then where to sell on a climax top pop. Even though there was almost like a three-week tight right there, or those, it even looked like railroad tracks, I guess, to a point. There was a climax top there that things just, you know, all of a sudden just blew out, almost like a exhaustion top, and there was a time to actually sell. So anyway, the point is, this is kind of a neat book. It's available on Amazon.com. It's available probably in the bookstores. It's available. I have a link on the website about it. It's the How to Make Money in Stocks, The Complete Investing System. And you get, digital daily edition you get with this. You get the Action Plan DVD. You get all sorts of stuff.
Right, and an investing workshop and those are normally $49, and you get that free with the book. Those are in cities all around the United States and Canada. So really, you know, just as I said before, a lot to really get people going in this and get you started. It's not about just buying a book and reading it. It's really getting in there and understanding how to use it.
Right, exactly. You know what is also interesting is that if you look at the actual numbers of the IBD compared to other indices, you know, the IBD 100, which again, it's you say it's not a buy list, but you don't really sell either. So it's just the 100 stocks at that given point, because it's never really a point where it will come off the list, I guess. But if it falls, let's say, I'm just picking a number. If one of the stocks on the IBD 100 falls 20% in a week, well, you don't just automatically take it off that week because it's part of the IBD 100. And that's a market-weighted index, I believe, right?
Yeah, the
Cap weighted.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah, market cap. There's a lot of, as I said before, it really has sort of a small cap, mid cap flavor to it, because the more important thing about the IBD 100 is that it tends to focus on the stocks making those big price moves. You know, we do have a section every Tuesday, that's a great one for people who want maybe a little less volatility, a little more liquidity. That's the big cap 20. And, you know, as the name suggests, those are bigger cap stocks with a market cap of at least $15 billion, trading at least 300,000 shares a day. So that, you know, that threshold is pretty low. Most of them have way more than that. And that's something for the investor that maybe wants a little less volatility in their portfolio, but wants to focus on the top big caps. And, you know, nothing wrong with kind of mixing the two as well. So you have some more liquid stocks in your portfolio that are less likely to get whipsawed around, and then some of the smaller caps that maybe have potential to show the bigger gains.
Right. So, you know, do me a favor. I know that you have some examples you could probably give me of, I guess it would be like big leaders that are emerging from the last year or so. And I can think of a couple of names. It's like a Netflix, for example. I could see 32 downgrades of Netflix in a day, and the stock will still go up. Okay.
Right.
you know, and this is, you know, the same thing with, although an Apple, which has been there for a while, is kind of stuck in a range right now. You have upgrades coming out every single day on Apple with a price target of somewhere in about the 340 to 350 range, and the stock is kind of stuck. But a Netflix is just, the investors are goo-goo over. They're just crazy.
Right.
You know, and that is an interesting phenomenon there, that it just keeps on going up and up and up. There's a few names like that, like a Priceline. Priceline can come out with an awful earnings. It can go down for a day and a half, and then it goes right back up. You know, people think, you know, it's like they don't care. They're looking for a better price point to buy in, regardless of what the future holds. And I think that's kind of a very interesting scenario. Can you tell us a little bit? You know, those are a couple of names I was thinking about. But, you know, what other examples do you have that emerged through, you know, last year or so? And maybe why was that? What part of the can't slim did that really take on?
Well, you know, one of the most interesting ones, and it's actually doing quite well again right now, is Green Mountain Coffee Roasters.
Mm.
And, you know, this is a name that CanFlim investors are very familiar with by now. But, you know, if you're not really a CanFlim investor, you may not realize what a terrific stock this one has been. This one popped up on our screens back in, you know, late 2008, early 2009, right when the market itself was still in the depths of that terrible bear. So I can recall that this one was coming up on screens, we were writing about it, and then, you know, lo and behold, in March, when the market did go into that new rally in March of 2009, Green Mountain was one of the very first ones out of the gate that very first day. And, you know, that's not unusual. You'll often see these big leaders emerge in those first days and weeks as a new uptrend is confirmed. So Green Mountain was one of those. And then, you know, that actually a lot of CanFlim investors did get in on in those early weeks after the new market uptrend. Then it had a huge spike higher on a good earnings report in late April. And, you know, over the last year or so, it's corrected a few times. It's consolidated along with the market, and as investors have digested some gains on that one. And that's normal. That's very normal. And, again, it just recently cleared another cupless handle and has been bought up again in volume recently. It's got an RS relative price strength line that's trending higher, relative strength line, rather, that's trending higher. And that's a terrific sign. It's got a relative price strength rating of 96. So its price action is better than 96% of stocks. And, you know, again, nobody should take this as a recommendation, but this is something to keep an eye on right now. In fact, it's highlighted in the most recent IBD 100 as something that is near a buy point. So, you know, depending on one's risk tolerance, what else you have in your portfolio, any number of factors could be something to take a look at.
Now, we've looked at this stock before, and it seemed to get on that spike where you were talking about, got a very, very richly valued. And there was some, you know, we were actually looking to short it. We shorted a little bit of it. We got stopped out of it on a short. And then the stock split, or I don't know if it was the same time. It came down very, very hard and then started rolling back up again. One of the catalysts recently was that they're actually increasing the cost of their K-cups. Because obviously, for a few different reasons, the margins are going to be squeezed if they don't, because coffee prices have been dramatically increasing over time. But one of the other things is that they basically are they're not in the coffee business per se. They're in the razor blade business, as I see it.
Right? I know what you're saying. Yeah, you know? The K-cups, right?
Yeah, the K-cups. They're selling the machines through Keurig. They bought up a couple of different companies in the coffee space last year, and then basically what they have to do, if you want the coffee, you have to get the K-cup, which is kind of interesting. Now, I've also heard something strange, a total aside, and really nothing to do with the stock, but that a lot of businesses won't use that product inside of their businesses. Do you know why?
No.
Because a lot of people have the Keurig at home, and they find that the employees steal all the K-cups. Seriously. I mean, I'm just telling you what I heard the other day. It was kind of funny.
Oh, my gosh.
You never know. What about a stock like, I know it's one of the top in your coal areas, LLEN, L&L Energy. You familiar with that one?
Right. That one was another one of those, like we were talking about JKS a while ago, that just had this crazy uptrend a few months back. Right. Now, this one, you know, this is a very small company. This is kind of what we've been alluding to a little bit in this conversation already. It's got a market cap of only $247 million. It trades kind of a lot of shares relative to that market cap, 627,000 shares a day. And that's still on the lower side. But, you know, this has been a very volatile stock. It's just had all kinds of wide and loose, crazy trades. Right now, it's trading in the single digit, so that's not a good sign. You only want to be looking at stocks trading, you know, at least $15 on the NASDAQ. So this is priced way too low right now. The fundamentals are still good. So it's kind of an example of why you never want to buy a stock just based on the fundamentals, because this chart is not appearing too great right now. But, you know, you never know. As they continue to improve, and maybe as it does get the attention of more institutional buyers, you never know. It could be another watch list candidate, you know.
We like the stock from the fundamentals. We like it at this price compared to what other prices it's been. You know, this could easily, it goes from, you know, $8.50 to $10.50 very quickly and back. It's been as high as, I think, 14 and a half or so. I know that this is the kind of stock that, with the fundamentals it has, if the stock had an orderly rise, nothing crazy, and it got towards 15, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's at the either at the top of the, close to the top of its industry, of its, not its industry, its stock group with IBD.
I mean, the fundamentals are just outstanding. Yeah. I mean, just a string of triple-digit earnings growth in recent quarters. I mean, it's just notching some great sales. And by the way, this is a coal mining company. I'm not sure if we mentioned
that. Out of China.
Yeah. This is one of those interesting ones, isn't it, that they've got a so-called U.S. headquarters,
right,
but most of their business is in China.
Right, exactly.
There's a few of those. But yeah, so, you know, this is one other thing that I did want to point out that is some reason for individuals to be cautious. We're showing only 4 mutual funds owning shares of this one right now. So, you know, that's pretty scant ownership. And that tells you, you know, if one or two of those decide they want to get out based on some news and an individual is holding shares in one of those, you can absolutely get clobbered. That's why the fund ownership is so important.
Right, exactly. But I will tell you, not trying to totally defend this, but I think that's up from zero not too long ago.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at that. it is growing. You're absolutely right. It's growing. But it's that's the bright side, isn't it? You know, I mean, these things do grow. It's absolutely the case that you can track these and watch them improve over the months and years. And something that, you know, 6 months ago, you know, IBD might have said, oh, you know, be careful about that, then it does end up coming onto the list of top performers because more funds do come in.
Right.
The price action does improve. So, yeah, absolutely. A lot of these are worth tracking, even though it's not something you would buy at the moment.
Right, I hear you. So lots to delve into. This is a very, like I said, a thick book. I don't mean to make that complicated, but it's about 500 pages, which is great. There's a lot of charts in here, which gives you, actually, you know, one of the things I really liked here, I've seen this in a couple of books before that I think you put out, but in the end here, let me just kind of zip through here for a second here. There's a test, a little quiz, also there's blank charts. Let me see where that is. It's towards the end, right? I think there's blank charts towards the end.
Yeah, it's where you can kind of test your knowledge.
Like what's going to happen next?
You
can write down what is probably about 20 pages of those. It's actually from about page 430 till the end, and it gives you these various charts. It doesn't tell you what the chart is. It just gives you patterns, relative strengths. It gives you the S&P 500, gives you volume, and tells you where it's going. This one looks like it should break out right here. I wonder what happens. I'd like to see the final. How do we know where the answers? The answer in the back?
Yeah, the answers are in there.
Oh, okay. But that's always an interesting way to do it. And then also, you're showing different places to investing like a professional, where to get portfolio information. This is kind of what I had in my last book, too. It was all about, you know, where to get information from. And there's even some stuff in here about news, like Thomas Sowell wrote a variety of different things back in March and all that, and what happened to the markets, how to use IBD and how to understand the charts. And, you know, Investor's Business Daily has a charting system that is excellent. It's, frankly, a little expensive compared to other charting systems, but it also provides you all the fundamental data. It's called Daily Charts. And I think that's
Daily graphs.
The old name for charts was graphs, so it's been around for a while. And the Daily Graphs actually is a great platform for investigating on one sheet, if you will, one page. We have something like this too, but different data. But it shows you the chart. It shows you the formations. It shows you the relative strengths. But it also shows you on a weekly, let's say, a lot of data about, okay, what's the management ownership? Probably a lot of things, if I'm not mistaken, from what you read to me just a moment for LNL, was all from the daily chart, Daily Graph.
That's
right.
Yep. I've got these up in front of me all day long, Andrew.
Right.
I use them all day long. It's absolutely a terrific tool. I mean, you know, let me just tout this for a moment, if I can. There's even features on here that a lot of people don't know about. And by the way, this is being upgraded pretty soon. I just want to say.
Well,
can
I put in my two cents? They got to do something about the annotations. They're awful.
Well, there's a new, there is, MarketSmith is something that is being unrolled this month.
I saw that.
Yeah, Right. It is sort of the new version of Daily Graph. So it'll have everything you see on here and more. So there's a lot of reports.
Right. And all I was saying was that it was just, when I say they're awful, the annotations are fine. They're slow. You know, they're just slow to move around and getting around them and all that. I like little, you know, when you take an arrow and I want to throw it on there, I want to throw on a trend line, I want to throw on whatever it is. It's just, it makes the charting system much slower. And I have tried the new one, which I think is a Flash-based system versus this Java-based system. And that works very well.
Yeah, the MarketSmith is something that our programmers, actually one of our sister companies, William O'Neill and Company, not IBD, but one of the sister companies, the programmers have been working on this for, you know, a year or more and really taken in a lot of customer comments and understood how users want to work with these tools. So I've been using that one as well, and I think folks will be very happy with a lot of the improvements they see in there.
I agree. So that's available, and you have those. One of the other things that happens is Kate actually does a variety of different market wraps or stock review each and every day, goes over what happened with the market, uses the charts actually from there. And there are a lot of things that people don't know about, by the way, in the charts. For example, one of the things you can do is you can go and find a lot of information about statistical information about stocks over their 20-day and 50-day. There's also things in the pull-downs or the drop-downs inside the charts, not just about the companies, but about the indices themselves that I think people don't probably know about. So lots to check out. Is there a free trial for that at all?
There are free trials. If people go to check out marketsmith.com or even from Investors Business Daily, from any of our websites, you can navigate to any of these products and get yourself a trial on the paper, on investors.com, figure out how to use the screening tools. So plenty of options there to get your feet wet.
Yeah, it's good stuff there. All right, so Kate Stalter, I think. Whoa, we talked a lot of things, didn't we, here? Lots of different things.
Yeah, I know.
I'll tell you, though really, at the end of the day, you just go right to it. One of the things I do, by the way, is I've signed up for the daily, I get two things. I get the tech report, and I get the daily market report, market review, what happened during the day. It's kind of a snapshot of the highlights. It comes to my email in the evenings, I don't know what time, 7 o'clock p.m., I think, or so in the evening on the East Coast. And then you can go back and look at anything that you want to look at. And again, the market wrap videos and a daily stock spotlight are always done on there. And you can check it out. They take you right through a video of what's going on with the markets, where we are in the markets, what to be looking for, what are the problems and maybe potholes that may be seeing, or what are some of the opportunities that you may be seeing right there. So that's available. Go to Amazon, pick up a copy of How to Make Money in Stocks, Complete Investing System. And I will tell you that I've read these books several times. They're very dog-eared because even as a professional, this is one of the classics in the industry that combines two things that you know that I am. Actually, I'll go three things. Three is very similar. You know, we have what we call our funda, the Quanta Funda Techna system, where we use quantitative analysis to pick up stocks through screens and utilize that for the ones that meet certain criteria, both on a fundamental and technical basis. Then we look at the fundamentals to make sure they meet up with all of the criteria that we like. And then we go to the charts. Very similar in that those three modules are also used by Investors Business Daily and William O'Neill. They did testing back to the 1800s on much of this, and they have a different level of charting and things that I do. But nonetheless, this is one of the probably the best things that I would suggest that you do for a beginning investor or even a novice investor, even a professional if you want to check out and refresh a bit. There's always something new that you can find in there. So I do encourage you, and I think it just came on the shelves recently, right? Just like I think last month or so. So all right, Kate, we'll talk soon.
Great.
I thank you for joining me, and you know, good luck in investing, and let's see what happens with these markets as we move forward.
All right, thanks, Andrew. This has been a lot of fun.
All right, Kate, I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Kate Stalter from Investors Business Daily, and I want to thank her for joining us. Next week, I want to let you know that we do have another author. His name is Mike Bellafore. He is a prop trader, or was a prop trader, writing about one good trade. And that should be really interesting to talk about. I also thought that we would go and spend a little time talking about some of the economics next week as well, and some of the potential political fallout. We'll kind of get into that and answer some of your questions that we had. We had a good number come in this week. Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com is the place to go if you want to ask me a question or have it answered on the air. It's always available to you. And finally, if you haven't done so already, I encourage you. You want to be a client of ours? You like what we're talking about. You like the things that we bring to the table here. You like the stocks we mention. You like the economic theory behind what we talk about. Well, all you have to do is check it out over at the 14-minute virtual tour at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a link in the show notes for this show. And all you have to do is go through there, and you'll see all about what it's all about. We'll get you some information. $50,000 minimum in order to start an account with that TDI Managed Growth Strategy. It's totally open. It's totally transparent. You see each and every week what we write about, what we do. And on top of it, you have full access to your own account. This is not a hedge fund, so there's no commingling of funds. So I encourage you, if you're kind of sitting on the sidelines, a little bit discouraged about what's going on in the market, should I be in bonds, stocks, cash, short, long, what should I do? You know what? You've come to the right place, the Disciplined Investor. Check it out. We'd love to have you as a client, and we'd love to get you on board and let you see what's going on with how we do things for our clients and how we actually invest money. Again, we'll see you next week. Tell a friend about this on iTunes. The summer is just about coming to an end. The volume should start picking up next week as the holidays are over, Labor Day is over, etc., and we'll see actually what the institutions are doing. We're a little bit short in this market right now. We've been adding to our short positions up to about the 1110 line or so, which is that major line in the sand right now, and we'll see how that works from here. Terry Bedford was talking about it last week, and we think that there's something to be said about that. We have long positions, and we have hedges. And again, you'll find out all about that on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, that virtual tour. Until then, we'll see you next week. Have a prosperous week, a wonderful end of summer. We get back, we're ready to do some real business. I'll speak to you soon. This is Andrew Horowitz signing off from the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.